Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
With National Voter Registration Day celebrated this week, pro-voting rights groups are encouraging potential voters to register, and for those who want to vote, to make a plan in advance. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has some important dates for voters in New York to remember.
New Yorkers who are not currently registered to vote in the November elections have until October 9th to do so. There's several ways to do it. You can register at your county board of elections, at several state agencies, request a voter registration form by mail, or call a hotline number. That's listed on the State Board of Elections website. This year, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, anyone who is registered to vote can request an absentee ballot to vote by mail in the November 3rd election. Last month, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed the bills making the changes.
Allowing a voter to get an absentee because of risk of illness, that's COVID.
The New York State Board of Elections says the cutoff date for requesting the absentee ballots by mail, email, or telephone is October 27th. But the board warns that the United States Postal Service has said, due to recent cutbacks, that they cannot guarantee timely delivery of ballots that are requested 15 or fewer days before the election. That makes the de facto deadline October 19th. The ballots must be postmarked by November 3rd, Election Day. They can also be hand-delivered to an early polling site between October 24th and November 1st. Voters can still go in person to their local or state boards of elections through November 2nd, that's the day before elections, to request an absentee ballot, fill it out, and hand it in. That's a lot of dates to remember, and so groups, including the New York State League of Women Voters, have compiled key information on their websites. The League also launched a national website, Vote 411, to help guide voters through their state's rules. The group's Jennifer Wilson says all of the interest in voting in one of the most hotly contested presidential elections in recent history can only be good for democracy.
I'm definitely optimistic. I'm excited to see high levels of turnout. I mean, from our standpoint as a league, we always love to see when New York does better than we typically do, since usually we're one of the worst in the nation when it comes to turnout.
Once the expected record number of mail-in ballots arrive at Board of Elections offices, it's likely that more of them will be counted this year. New York has historically had one of the highest numbers of absentee ballots disqualified on minor technical errors. But a recently settled lawsuit initiated by the League will allow more of the ballots to be considered valid. Wilson says the agreement will prevent ballots being thrown out for very minor technical glitches.
If you marked outside of the designated area, if you filled out your ballot in pencil instead of black or blue ink, if you sealed your inner affirmation envelope with tape instead of licking it closed, all of those things used to allow your ballot to get thrown out, but now those things will no longer cause your ballot to be disqualified. And if it is up for disqualification, you will receive notice to be able to address any issues with your signature or with your witness declaration.
Sometimes voter signatures on file are decades old and their handwriting may have changed over time. Now voters will be given an opportunity to verify that it is indeed them signing the ballot. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo this week dismissed his political President Donald Trump's Justice Department, which moved to classify New York City, Seattle, and Portland as anarchy jurisdictions and withhold billions of dollars in federal funds, you know, from this money to the coronavirus. President has made a case of the difference between the blue states and the red states.
But boy, does New York need the money.
Well, New York does need the money, and one can only imagine that some money will be forthcoming under an impending deal. And Governor Cuomo has been insistent that that be done. He has never announced a plan B, although we know there's clearly a plan B, because if you haven't got the money, you can't spend it. And we're talking about schools, and we're talking about keeping our prisons going, and we're talking about police departments, and we're talking about paving the roads. It's all there. Right now, we know that places like schools are anticipating the worst, which is, you know, cuts of up to 20%. But in the meantime, Cuomo has stuck to his guns, and he's going to continue to do that. That's clear, because he really has no choice. I think he's winning.
Well, and as we wait to see what the federal government does, we see that New Jersey leaders decided to raise taxes on the state's wealthiest residents, something we've been hearing especially from progressives in New York, but the two leaders of the houses in the state legislature, both Democrats, Andrea Stewart-Cousins in the Senate, Carl Heastie in the Assembly, both support the idea of a tax on the ultra-rich. Many say that's not the way to go.
Well, the governor's one of them. The fact is that we've already lost a lot of the millionaires and billionaires of New York State. All they got to do is move to Florida. It's that simple. So Cuomo doesn't want to lose what we have in the state. I get that. It's interesting that New Jersey did do this tax raise, because it means that there would be those people before who might have just gone across the George Washington Bridge into New Jersey, but not now. Now they got to go further south in order to get this thing done. So, you know, that is a big fight. Look, if you were the leader of the Assembly or the Senate, it's an easy out. You say, raise the taxes, and people say, yeah, raise the taxes on those who can really afford to pay it. And by the way, I'm for that. I agree with that. The number of $400,000 a year, most people don't make anything like that, has been committed. You pay more if you make more than $400,000. I can only say it sounds attractive. But I think the governor knows what he's talking about.
You spoke with the minority leader of the state assembly, Will Barkley, this week, and he pointed out that the governor may have a problem because of the progressives, the, quote, socialists that have been elected to office, that will be pushing on the left to make him make some of these decisions, like raising taxes, that he doesn't want to make.
Well, that's right. AOC and the squad are not only in Congress, they have representatives and people who are carrying that flag in the state legislature. And as Trumpism goes forward, and as people react with horror to some of the things that the president is doing, some of the things that they are saying looks quite attractive. We saw an election in next door Massachusetts, David, in which a liberal congressman, Richie Neal, vanquished his progressive opponent, and vanquished his self-styled progressive opponent, won by 20%. Incredible. And he actually carried the opponent's hometown of Mount Holyoke. So it's not all that everybody who gets elected is going to be a self-styled progressive. But it does spell some trouble for those in the legislature who are worried that if they say no to some of the ideas of the so-called progressives, that they risk being defeated by primary opponents themselves. That's something they got to watch out for.
It appears that Dr. Fauci was watching out for New York in Senate testimony this week in front of Rand Paul, the senator. He got a little animated. He wasn't happy with what Rand Paul was suggesting, including Rand Paul going after New York, saying, you know, they have the most deaths of any state. And, you know, how can you say that Cuomo's done a good job? And he took him to task on that and explained just how New York, once we realized the virus was in the city, took the necessary steps to get folks to do what was needed to flatten the curve. And he stood up for Cuomo on that.
And they did. I once asked Governor Cuomo, I said, if Dr. Fauci is fired by Trump, would you want to hire him? He said, I'd move heaven and earth in order to get that done. You know, Fauci's a man who has weathered the storm so far. And even now, if Trump fires him now, it'll put him into even worse shape. Fauci is one of those heroes that comes out of a tough time. We saw it during Watergate, and now we're seeing it right here. There are people with morals, people with heavy ethical standards, who are doing what they need to do. And Fauci is, of course, one of them.
And New York has done well in terms of the percentage of folks now that are getting the virus. However, there is a cluster that's been identified in New York City. Urgent action is needed, says New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. Four neighborhood outbreak on the Ocean Parkway cluster. We see colleges that have come back and have had outbreaks, primarily isolated to those colleges. But now you have winter on the way and the prospect of a second wave. We're seeing that happen in Britain right now. So we're not out of the woods here.
By no means are we out of the woods. And COVID has become the most important thing that Americans are having to face. Because if you're dead, there are no political options. We have come to the point where in America, 200,000 people have died, more than that. And in the end, people are going to be put on the honor roll, politicians, for what they did and how they stood up. Even if everybody wants to go back to the way that it was, it's just impossible to do that. And so you put kids in a college and they begin to socialize, and pretty soon you got an outbreak. Because the insidious thing about this virus is it only takes one. And one will infect others, and others will infect others. And that's why, if you're a college president right now, you didn't sign up for this, but it's tough work. No question, it's tough work. Because you have to decide what's more important, keeping our kids alive or keeping the institutions open. And we do know that some of these, particularly some of the private or independent colleges, are in real trouble, David, in New York State, because, they have a financial model which has been set all a kilter by this virus, and it looks like some of them may be in a position where they'll close.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A New York congressional candidate who's considered likely to join the House next year says he and 15 other plaintiffs have won a lawsuit against President Donald Trump and the U.S. Postal Service. The suit sought to protect the right to a free and fair election. This comes as a number of lawsuits in recent weeks aimed to protect voter rights and mail-in voting following the Trump administration's changes to the Postal Service. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
Mondaire Jones, the Democratic candidate in the 17th District, says he led the suit against the President, Postal Service, and Postmaster General Louis DeJoy.
This lawsuit is about the preservation of democracy itself, which is something that we would expect of any civilized society, right? But instead, we have a president and a postmaster general who have committed themselves to undermining a free and fair election this November for partisan political purposes. And as a candidate for Congress here in New York's 17th congressional district, I have a particular constitutional interest in running in competing in a free and fair election. But also just as anyone, a private citizen who wants to cast a ballot and have that ballot counted in what is very likely to be the most consequential election of our lifetime, I had to do what folks have been doing across this country, which is, you know, having all hands on deck as Congress tries to figure out how to hold this president and the Postmaster General accountable. I want to do my part by getting a federal district court judge to weigh in. And that judge, Judge Marrero, did that in an incredible way. He issued a nationwide injunction requiring the Postal Service to treat all election mail as priority and first class, requiring the Postal Service to pre-approve all overtime pay for USPS employees, and of course, requiring the Postal Service to submit a list of steps that are necessary to restore first-class mail and marketing mail to on-time delivery metrics that pre-existed the attempts to dismantle the Postal Service. And one thing that's really great about this is now there's a federal monitor, the judge himself, who's going to be overseeing the implementation of these promises by the Postal Service.
Other co-plaintiffs include Democratic State Senator Alessandra Biaggi, who represents portions of the Bronx and Lower Westchester County, other state-level candidates, and voters who will not be able to vote in person or vote early. They sued to ensure the Postal Service was required to take certain actions, as Jones stated, to ensure the timely delivery of their absentee ballots in the November 3rd elections. In a statement, a Postal Service spokesperson says, quote, "The Postal Service is reviewing the court's decision. There should be no doubt, however, that the Postal Service is ready and fully committed to handling expected increased volumes of election mail between now and the conclusion of the November 3rd election. Our number one priority is to deliver the nation's election mail securely and in a timely fashion," end quote. The judge did not grant all injunctions the plaintiffs sought. Jones, a former litigator in the Westchester County Law Department and former Department of Justice staffer during the Obama administration, explains.
The lawyers representing us, who are incredible, really pushed to have the mail sorting machines that were destroyed and the postal boxes that were ripped from the ground reinstated. And so, you know, you can't win it all. But one of the great things about this is that the Postal Service is required to get back to the highest levels of the metrics that pre-existed these operational changes that were proposed by DeJoy and President Trump.
At the end of August, New York Attorney General Letitia James led a coalition of states and cities from across the country in filing a lawsuit to stop what she called the Trump administration's attempts to dismantle the U.S. Postal Service. 1 week later, she took further action to halt efforts to undermine the USPS and the election. Jones is running to succeed fellow Democrat Nita Lowey, who is not seeking re-election to the 17th district that includes all of Rockland County and part of Westchester.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustinum. Former presidential candidate Andrew Yang and Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson have launched a universal basic income pilot program in the city. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
The Spark of Hudson partnered with Yang's Humanity Forward organization to implement the pilot program, which will provide $500 to 25 recipients a month over the course of 5 years. Yang says applications were open to anyone living in Hudson earning less than $35,000 a year. According to U.S. Census data, the median household income in Hudson is $35,153.
We are going to make an enormous difference, we hope, not just in the lives of those 25 individuals, but really spark the community in a positive way.
The former Democratic presidential candidate sees Hudson with its 6,000 residents as a perfect environment for this kind of trial.
This is going to be perhaps the longest universal basic income trial in the country operating right now.
Johnson is excited to be part of a history-making initiative.
Application phase closed Sunday, so now people will be notified at the end of this week, which is extremely exciting. So they'll start the onboarding process. They'll get all the information on wraparound services and setting up bank accounts, and you know, they also will have opportunities to find out about each other and what other networks they can use to kind of help them along this financial literacy kind of progress.
Yang says successful applicants will be selected by a lottery system.
Someone you know is going to be a participant in this thing, just about guaranteed.
Yeah.
It might as well be you. I mean, who the heck wants to know the person? And when you be the person?
Yang adds the concept of providing all citizens with a guaranteed income is an idea that has been kicking around for decades.
It almost became law under Nixon. Milton Friedman, the economist, who most people regard as fairly conservative, was for it. So there's a very rich history behind universal basic income, and I'm glad that I helped introduce it to more Americans right as we needed it most. Right now, because of the pandemic, millions of Americans are struggling, and a majority of Americans believe we need universal basic income in this country right now, in perpetuity. And they are correct. Now, I'm not one to wait for Congress to get its act together. So we need to demonstrate that universal basic income would improve the lives of the vast majority of Americans. And that's what this trial is in part about.
Johnson says the UBI program represents the kind of innovation the country should be taking a closer look at.
To be at the helm of this happening in Hudson is exciting for myself, but also exciting for the city. I think people are tired of the same old politics.
Johnson and Yang say the UBI dollars will stay and circulate within the local economy. The five-year experiment will be closely watched by several mayors of small cities across the country.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Tupper Lake is part of the Tri-Lakes area of the Adirondacks that includes Lake Placid and Saranac Lake. Its primary draw is access to the surrounding mountains, lakes, and the Wild Center, but its remote location makes accessible high-speed internet service access a challenge. A new grant will help the town of Tupper Lake expand broadband service to businesses and some residents, as the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The Tupper Lake Broadband Committee formed last year. Its initial survey found that access and quality of internet service did not meet needs in the community. Development Authority of the North Country, or DANC, General Manager for Telecommunications Dave Wolf led an effort to obtain a $200,000 grant from the Northern Border Regional Commission to fund 5 miles of upgrades to Tupper Lake's business district and some additional businesses and residences.
For the existing businesses, it's more about reliability. We were talking to one business owner who said, I was out of service for a day and a half, and that is almost impossible to do because now I've got to write down credit card numbers and wait for, you know, a day to charge people and stuff like that, and it just was very difficult. So I think the reliability is important. You know, right now, it provides the opportunity to attract data-intensive businesses. And, you know, knowing that you have a wired community, that you can get any bandwidth you want, that the entire town is covered, I think will speak to maybe the ability to hopefully attract another business or two into the downtown.
A priority for 115th District State Assemblyman D. Billy Jones is getting high-speed internet to the more remote areas of the Adirondacks.
This is one of the most important things we can do, is to connect the North Country, because it affects so much, economic development, education. We see now with remote learning and distance learning, how important that is. It's not a luxury anymore. We need more subsidies to help with the affordability of it, more grant funding, more funding in general for these important services, because I just believe it touches so much and that we need it. Around the Adirondacks, all around the North Country, rural broadband is so hard to get. Rural internet is so hard to get. We need to do everything we can to do that.
Over 40% of families in the region live below what's called the ALICE threshold, earning more than the federal poverty limit, but not enough to be financially stable. United Way of the Adirondack Region President and CEO, John Bernardi, says finding ways to affordably provide access to reliable high-speed internet is particularly important to these ALICE, or asset-limited, income-constrained, employed families.
With remote learning, distance learning, hybrid models, there are numerous ALICE families across the region that either don't have access to what they need or can't afford what they need. And we're working closely with the school districts across the region to try to assess these needs and address them. In some cases, it's one family at a time. In other cases, it's whole communities, whole areas of our region that are struggling with this issue. But it's more important now than it ever has been. And that importance is not going to go away.
Construction on the fiber optic network in Tupper Lake will begin in the spring, and service is expected to be available in the summer of 2021. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2039. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.